Welcome to Disability Talks, a podcast produced by Abilities in Motion. I'm your host, Shelley Hauser. Join us for real conversations and no-nonsense talk from everyday people with disabilities living their most independent everyday lives. Tune in for the latest news surrounding disability, accessibility, and independence, where conversations aren't dissed and stories that need to be told aren't missed. So let's talk. Welcome back to Disability Talks. I'm your host, Shelley Hauser, and today's guests are actors, producers, comedians, advocates, educators, and parents. And they're here to give us a little look into their great big world. Please welcome to our studio, Sophia Cheyenne and Nick Nowicki.
Hi, so excited to be here.
Hey, it's great. You know, that's the first time I'm a newer parent than Sophia, but that's the first time I've had credits and then and parents in the same kind of thing.
So you're a little guy, right? You have a little boy?
No, I have a daughter, and Sophia has a boy.
So Sophia, your son's a little over a year.
That's right. My son's name is Logan, and he's 14 months old now. And it's really amazing to see him explore the house and also try and make sure that he's not going to get hurt in the process.
Good luck with that. Yeah. And Nick, your daughter's about four months or so.
That's right. I have a 4-month old daughter, and she's already in an arranged marriage to Sophia's son. So we're, you know,
tradition.
Yeah,
we love the idea. We talk about it as parents all the time, back and forth. Oh my gosh, it would
funny.
Be adorable.
Yeah,
but no, they'll but be friends no matter what, for yeah. sure.
It is so fun though to have, to go through the new parenting process with Sophia and her husband Clint.
Yeah,
you know, just to have that support system of people that are going through it or been through everything. And so literally my wife is literally calling Sophie all the time. Hey, what should I get with this or that? And, you know, it's just fun.
We relied on each other a lot in throughout our pregnancies and this new parent phase. It's been really nice.
I wanted to start off and have one or both of you explain, because I know there's different types of dwarfism, but can you explain to me what exactly for our listeners dwarfism is?
Yeah, the Sophia, cut me off if you want to jump in, but you know, dwarfism, there's over 200 kinds of dwarfism, and I have pseudoachondroplasia dwarfism. My wife has achondroplasia dwarfism, which is the most common kind of dwarfism. I believe 80-something% dwarfism is comprised by achondroplasia, and then the rest of 200 kinds, you know, makes up that small population, including pseudoachondroplasia. And Sophia?
Yeah, I have a rarer form. For short, we call it SEDC type dwarfism, but it means spondyloepiphyseal dysplasia congenita type dwarfism.
You see why I wanted her to set that up, what that title was?
You took the easy part of the question. Good job, Nick.
So that's my type. It does fall in that 20% where it's a more rare form. My husband has diastrophic dysplasia, which is a different form of dwarfism. And my son, our son has the same type of dwarfism as me. And dwarfism, I mean, if I were to give it a definition, you know, people of short stature, generally under 4'9", 4'9", it is a genetic condition. So it is caused by gene differences and gene changes that happen. And various genes are responsible for kind of the various types of dwarfism. So it's really fascinating once you get into like the genealogy of it, but we're a very diverse community. There's so many different types of dwarfisms. And yeah, it's funny when Nick and his wife and my husband and I hang out, we always talk about how the four of us each have a different type of dwarfism, which is a really rare. So it's super fun.
No, it's but it is really cool though that there are so many different kinds of dwarfism. And actually, both of us, we met our significant others at Little People of America national conferences. So there's a gathering of people that get together and do kind of social activities and also sports. So the community is able to kind of intermingle and in multiple ways.
What are some common stigmas that there is about dwarfism that you guys want to set the record straight on?
Well, I would just start off by saying that when I was born, my parents didn't have any exposure to dwarfism. They didn't really know what dwarfism was. And all they did know was Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, The Wizard of Oz. And so I think when I think of stigma, I definitely think of sort of how Hollywood has played a role in that for sure. And how there's been sort of this lack of humanity, seeing of humanity in little people and dwarfism, that, you know, we are people, but a lot of times in Hollywood, we've dressed up in costume where we played these very like fantasy sorts of roles, which are awesome. And we should be able to play those too. But I think a stigma that I feel like I face as an artist all the time is sort of that, combating with that. And just that it's still okay to not see us as like mothers and fathers and just people.
Nick, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with what Sophia had to say. And I think I would say the biggest stigma issue is just a lack of exposure. So in the history of dwarfism, we've always been seen in different areas, but I think dwarfism is pretty rare. I think it's 1 in 40,000. So growing up, I didn't see anybody that was like me. And, you know, there were so few depictions of little people in the media. And I think that that's changing a lot. You're seeing, you know, Peter Dinklage. He's, you know, won Emmys and Golden Globes. And, you know, we've seen so many great three-dimensional roles of little people. And frankly, even reality shows, you know, that have kind of, I guess, demystified dwarfism. And so I think that there's a lot more exposure. But I think in reality, the biggest stigma I think that people have is there's a big difference, you know, in reality, it's just, we're just shorter. So I think that society, beyond just little people and disability as a whole, I think that now people are just so much more open than I think they were in previous years.
You know, with the passing of Vern Troyer, who played Mini-Me in Austin Powers films, I thought he had a really great career. I thought he did a lot of things, but he didn't feel he could do like a lead action film, that he wasn't getting casted for those kinds of things. Do you see the shift in Hollywood?
Yeah, I mean, I dedicate the majority of my time to, is I created the Disability Film Challenge, which is a film competition that helps get people with disabilities involved in the entertainment industry. I created that 9 years ago, partnering with Easter Seals, the nation's largest disability services organization. And we've had hundreds of films created and countless success stories. And these are people with disabilities creating their own content, putting themselves out there. And I've seen firsthand, you know, studios, networks, producers, showrunners reaching out on a weekly basis and looking to hire people with disabilities, both in front of and behind the camera. Sophia, you know, has landed a, you know, recurring role on Loudermilk and the Farley Brothers. And, you know, there's a lot of momentum, you know, as you said, between the Rudermans, between Coda just coming out, which is, you know, one Sundance and is a deaf cast. So I think society wants to see themselves represented. And it's just leading the way for people with disabilities that want to tell their own stories too, to be creating their own content, to be putting themselves in the position to get their own opportunities. And I think then the networks and the studios are realizing that they haven't been as inclusive enough, and that they're, you know, frankly missing out on a huge demographic that wants to see themselves represented. So I think it's not just, you know, we want to do it because it's the right thing to do. I think it's a smart thing to do, because one, the people are winning awards through using disability centric storylines. And two, there's just a lot of talent out there.
Yeah, I'm excited too. I mean, I definitely see a shift happening And I think that there are definitely good people in Hollywood that want to, you know, show the diversity of the world and bring people that access that they need. I think that there is a lot of fear around that acceptance. And I think there's that's the disconnect sometimes that's still going on. But I definitely personally know people in the industry that are really fighting for the change. And truly, like, you know, I always think about like the young me, and now my son watches TV, you know, these little kid shows, and there are more diverse characters on these kid shows, like more than I ever had growing up, you know, and talking about different cultures and seeing kids in wheelchairs or any sorts of diversity, that's so important. So it's happening. It's just like really slow. But I think I do really do feel very optimistic for the future. And just to touch on really quickly about Vern Troyer and sort of like the mental health of that is, I think little people and people with dwarfism in the industry do have, you know, there's a stigma there specifically for our community. I think that, you know, we, this is my personal opinion, but I think we command a space when we're in it. Our bodies in space really mean something. And so I think that sometimes that's a little too intense for the camera, you know, but it's important and it can make real impactful change.
Do you find that there's a mental health crisis in your community? I know I've spoken to some persons of color and they have, you know, it's taboo to talk about mental health in the Black and colored communities. And do you find that it's a rampant issue in your community?
I think, you know, to me, I think mental health is not talked about enough in general, whether you're talking about little people community, the disability community. So many friends of mine, you know, you talk about the quarantine, you know, the pandemic still happening and people staying indoors. Those that don't have significant others, they're by themselves. I mean, mental health is a huge issue that is a taboo subject, no matter, you know, whether you're talking about little people or people with disabilities.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree. I think mental health needs to be talked more. I support any mental health advocate I see on the internet or people that are trying to do that work. I'm always supporting that work. It's so important. That's a stigma in and of itself, obviously. And I do. I think that our community struggles a lot in for many reasons, like not even just those that are in the entertainment industry, but sort of like what I was saying, I think that little people can be bullied a lot and mistreated a lot more so than maybe more so than other sorts of disabilities or other sorts of adversities. And I think that does play a real big toll. And currently our community is struggling and going through a lot talking about pharmaceutical companies and this weird sort of new eugenics conversation that's happening in our community, which is really tough. And I think people are having a hard time. It's an issue that isn't addressed as much as I'd like to see it addressed, but that's the case in a lot of areas and with a lot of people, like Nick said.
So we could just mention it today and do our part.
Exactly.
What were you going to say, Nick?
No, and I think that there's something else that's interesting about dwarfism as a whole is, you know, when you talk about disability, the stats are, according to the CDC, 1 in 4 Americans has some form of disability. That's 61 million Americans. And the vast majority of those disabilities are you know, cognitive or invisible disabilities. When it comes to being a little person, you know, there is no hiding what you are. We are very much, hey, that's, you know, it's, we're out there. So I think that adds another layer that depending on whether you're born,
limb difference.
Well, yeah, it doesn't matter what limb difference or, you know, you end up becoming paralyzed or wheelchair user later in life. You know, I think that with dwarfism, this is something too, where it's everybody kind of copes with their disability and their differences in different ways. You know, as being a little person, I think that, you know, at times it is cool that now we're in a space and a time, you know, I think even the public are coming up and they're being more, I guess, open and curious. And I think that they've learned proper terminology more. And so I think that that's going to help. And so I think that that's another layer of just being a little person is being accepting yourself. And whether you're a little person, you have a disability or you don't, that just ends up being a big part of life.
You almost have to find your sense of humor with it and find your strength. Do you think maybe that's why you guys got into comedy and acting? Because you had to find your sense of humor in life?
I mean, for me, 100%. You know, I had my mechanism to get out of trouble was always to make a joke or, you know, using comedy to also disarm situations. And so I think that that's just a part of who I am. I didn't look at it like this is my career in entertainment. It was just a part of who I am as a person. And I think probably to an extent, it was a, you know, deflection. But the other part was, it's just something fun to do.
I totally agree. But I think it's funny, my journey, I would definitely say it was being a performer is sort of a coping mechanism for me. I didn't realize that that's what it was until I was older as well. But I think it was just an acceptance of my body. I had, you know, a hard time with as a kid. And so being on stage, being able to tell a story or feel a character and live, you know, through an empathetic lens in that way just healed me and has always healed me and always made me feel more secure in my own body. So I think that that's definitely been part of it, being in the arts. And that sort of eventually shifted into advocacy for me because I realized, well, I'm in these spaces and people are asking questions and I need to advocate for myself. Like there, no one else is going to do it for me. So sort of how I've come on this journey to where I am now.
It is. It really is. Because I think if as somebody in the disability community, it's my responsibility to help crush those stigmas. And this podcast is just one way that I can do it. By letting you guys tell your stories and everybody else is telling their stories. So thank you.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's important, though, that you bring up, too, about this podcast and what you're doing. I mean, I think there's so much pride in disability. And I for sure have so much pride in my dwarfism and in the community. Sophia talked about, you know, pharmaceutical companies and how much this is a sensitive issue. You know, I love my height and, you know, my wife, who's also a little person, and the community, and Sophia and her husband is my best friend since we were kids. And I think there's so much beauty in our community and in disability in general. And so I think that that's something that I've seen more and more, and it's been something that I've focused a lot of my energy on through the film challenge and through my activism. But, you know, and then the last thing I want to say is we are different, you know, because I know you were talking about, well, this is different than my point of view and dwarfism and, you know, limb difference or amputee or wheelchair user are all different. But I do feel like we're all in the same club. Like if I go into a restaurant and I see somebody else who's blind or, you know, or deaf or in a wheelchair or missing a leg, I'm like, there's a little bit of like a wink and I'm like, hey, what's up? How you been?
Do we have a universal sign?
We should.
You know, for like you see somebody else. I think we should all come up with something.
I mean, I've always felt that even as a kid, like before, you know, any of this stuff, it would just like you just end up getting nudged together with like a family friend. We're like, hey, this is my Uncle Jimmy. You guys should get to know each other.
Always.
So let me ask you, what appropriate terms are acceptable and why?
It's a good question.
Well, I think, you know, to be honest, like I think it's, you know, the history, words change too. You know, Little People of America was founded as Midgets of America, which was the term that was used in a different generation. I don't really ever, I'm not somebody that gets offended too, though. So I just kind of went along. It was announced as Little People of America. And I, you know, to me, that's the accepted term. Dwarfism, you know, Sophia, I don't know. What do you think?
I would agree. I would say little person is the most universal, and dwarfism is as well. I know little people that don't like to be called a dwarf or dwarfism. I love that word. I am dwarf pride all the way. I have dwarfism. That's what I have. But I think that word's seen maybe a little more medically, which is why perhaps folks don't love it. Mm-hmm. But that is an acceptable term for sure. And so is little person or little people. And I just want to say that, you know, for any listeners, I know I've heard from non-disabled people, average height people, oh, well, calling you little person feels mean, feels derogatory to me. And I'm like, I get that. I mean, I guess if that's how someone feels, then sure. But at the end of the day, if that is what the community wants to be called, then that's what the community wants to be called, you know? So I think little person is acceptable. It doesn't bother us. And if it bothers other folks, you know, I think we need to investigate what that means. You know what I mean? But
yeah. Yeah, people.
I don't know. You know, like, I think that it might be too much of a label for people that really identifies who we are. And I know that mistakenly someone is talking about a child and would say, oh, a little person, you know, and I think that there's a crossover there. So words aren't perfect. I always say, like, call me by my name. Ask me what my name is. You can't go wrong, you know? And I feel like that's a great rule of thumb to follow too.
And with that, we're going to take a commercial break and get back after the break.
Abilities in Motion is a Pennsylvania-based nonprofit organization dedicated to helping individuals with disabilities live their lives on their own terms. Abilities in Motion strives to eliminate psychological stereotypes, physical barriers, and outdated attitudes that prevent social and civic inclusion, as well as promote the independent living movement to empower, educate, and advocate for individuals with disabilities. For more information about programs and services Abilities in Motion provides, call 610-376-0010 or visit our website at www.abilitiesinmotion.org.
Welcome back, listeners. This is Shelley, and I'm here with Sophia Cheyenne and Nick Novicki as parents, advocates, educators, and comedians and producers and actors. Gosh, did I miss anything?
That's a long list. That's enough.
It is. It's not actually everything. I just kind of like cut it short because you guys are so involved in so many things. It's incredible. Sophia, I want to start with you. You've done a lot of advocacy and a lot of education. So you were a definite hit for me to be on the show here. Part of you have two organizations that you work with, and I wanted you to address those and tell us more about the work that you do in the theater and out of the theater.
Absolutely. Thank you. And yes, we do. We wear many hats, Nick and I. And switching gears even in this podcast, I have been doing education and advocacy work for a while. I started after college, I started out as a teaching artist. And that was really the beginning of me, you know, officially being into, you know, public school system and working with kids. And from there, eventually my advocacy and my dwarfism kind of blended. And then that became part of my education work as well. So I have been working with the Dwarf Artist Coalition for the last 6 years. I'm slowly transitioning out of that because I'm now going to be the inclusion director for Little People of America, which is a big, exciting, ambitious role that I'm taking on. But the work with the Artist Coalition was amazing, and it started out really from nothing. It was just a few people gathering, and it was a very dormant group of people. But the goal is to foster artists, new artists, find the artists that have dwarfism in the country and big goals around the world, and have them connect with each other and network, collaborate, create together. So we actually made a project that I ended up just calling the Telephone Project, because it's, and lots of arts spaces do something like this, where it's just a curation of art. It can be any kind of art. It can be spoken word poetry. It can be a dance. It can be music, singing. And we are inspired. It's like a lineup and everyone's inspired by the person before them. So there's a lineup of artists. Everyone does their work within 2 weeks. And by the end of it, you have this wonderful show that's got a bunch of new pieces of work. And a lot of the work that we did in our artistry was about dwarf identity and about, you know, our how we want to be seen in the world, or how we're seen, or how we feel we're perceived by the world. And I think it's been really healing and exciting for the community. We've grown so much from like just three people hanging with me in that first meeting to like a minimum of 50 artists now, and like people, about 100, 150 people coming to our events. So it's been fantastic. And that's still very circulated within the Little People of America community, which isn't all of little people, and it's not part of the larger disability arts community, you know? So those are big goals that I think are coming, but it's been great. And outside of that, a lot of the advocacy work I've done, I go to schools and I do talks, and I actually talk about dwarfism or I talk about disability. My husband and I will do it together. And a lot of times we've done it for young kids and we'll use a children's book. I've, you know, create scenes and we like reenact like a bully scene, and then we talk about it and, you know, kind of dissect that a little bit. So it's really good work. I feel like combining my artistry and my passion for advocacy has been like the biggest gift I could have given myself, and I did it by accident. And so it's been fantastic. And I just always want to make sure that people walk away knowing that, you know, people with dwarfism are just like anyone else, and that we have different needs, but everyone does. And so it's a matter of, you know, making friends and not bullies, and bringing that artistry about and empowering those dwarf artists to tell their stories and shine their light. So that's a lot of the work that I've done. And that's only two hats out of five.
Nick, you've taken on more serious roles in film and television. You've also produced numerous productions and are currently on a comedy tour right now. Tell us more about your body of work.
Sure. So I started doing stand-up really young. I was just my first week of college. But I started as a kid doing speeches for Little People of America and for the Dwarf Athletic Association of America. And I would do kind of fundraiser speeches. But I would always start with a joke, and I'd be like, you know, address the situation. You know, if there was a podium and I couldn't reach it, I would make a joke about it so that the audience would listen to me. But also it would just instinctually do it. And I was doing a version of stand-up comedy before I knew what stand-up comedy was. You know, I started to act when I was in middle school. And the reason why I started acting was because I couldn't play sports anymore in my community. I got, you know, I'm 3'10". So I just found a new hobby, and that was acting. That was my passion and my goal. And I continued to do it. But I learned pretty early in my career that I had to be in charge of all aspects. So I had to learn how to write and produce and create my own work if I wanted to play the roles that I wanted to play. By having real, you know, I always tell people, whether you have a disability or you don't, you need to be in charge of your own career. That Hollywood's not waiting for you. You need to get out there and create your own projects and your own work, because this is a medium where people want to look to see what else you've done. And I think this is really hard, because as people with disabilities, many times we're having a hard time at the starting point getting those first jobs. But the more you can do on your own, the more opportunities you're going to have to where you're going to be spotted, because those opportunities will come up for you. You know, now with a cell phone or DSLR camera, you can create in a way that was frankly so much harder when I started out. And I was like, I needed to, you know, I'm sounding like I'm 110, but I was like, when I started, there was a, you know, you had to have a big film reel and you know, but you literally had to have little mini tapes, and it was a much tougher process to make your own content.
Explain to our listeners more about your Easter Seals Disability Film Challenge, because you're both involved with this.
Yeah. So 9 years ago, I was looking around. I was like, why aren't more people with disabilities creating their own work? So I created the Disability Film Challenge, which is a film competition that started out as a weekend where you need to have somebody with a disability in front of or behind the camera, and you make a film that doesn't have to do with disability. I mean, it doesn't have to be related to the storyline. You just have to have somebody with a disability in front of or behind the camera. And really from that first time, the industry started reaching out. And then the community, people with disabilities were like, when's the next one? And so it kind of just started to build and build. And, you know, I partnered with Easter Seals, Southern California. Easter Seals is the largest disability services organization. And so it's now the Easter Seals Disability Film Challenge. And we've had hundreds of films created from all over the world. This last year, we had 100 films that were created, including Sophia shot a film from New York, which her cute and amazing son does a little cameo in it, possibly steals the show, even though she gives such an amazing performance. And
I know it was all him.
but the coolest thing about this is, you know, many times we talk in the community about what we want. We want more inclusion. We want to be more represented. Well, with the film challenge, this is something that becomes tangible because you can't just talk about what you want, but you have to make a film. But most importantly, it's a job opportunity because the industry are watching these films. And you never know when a project comes out, specifically something that happened a couple of years ago, Peter Farrelly, who, you know, the Farrelly brothers have created Dumb and Dumber and Something About Mary. And they've really been huge advocates for hiring people with disabilities throughout their entire career. So in 2018, Peter Farrelly, who has been a film challenge mentor and somebody who I've become friends with, had this great role for a little person actress. And he said, do you have any ideas of anybody? Do you know anybody? And I said, well, here's 10 films that starred little people from the film challenge. And he auditioned all those actors, and Sophia got a multiple season recurring role based on her talent. And she was ready for that opportunity. And the fact that he was able to look through and he was able to see her film, and then that became a job opportunity for her to, you know, audition. What's so cool about the film challenge is it's been something that has bridged communities and has allowed people to network amongst each other. So that's what I'm kind of most proud of. The film challenge is something that, you know, I work on it all the time, and it's a huge passion. But when you see people getting jobs from it, I mean, it's something I think I'm most proud of. Also, come see me on tour. Still touring. And
where's your tour at now, and where are you headed?
So I'm going to be opening up for Nate Bargatze, and we're doing a lot of dates. I'm doing other shows outside of Nate, but we'll be on the West Coast in October. And yeah, and then just excited to, you know, other projects and other things coming out.
And I just wanted to say that he filled a void that was existing, that people with disabilities, actors with disabilities, creative directors wanted an opportunity to create. And he really just did that. He just made it happen and said, so can you. And that's why everyone has jumped on this train that I think is so fantastic. I'm so grateful that I've gotten to professionally work through that experience, but more, even more so, is the connections with other disabled artists, creatives, and allies in the community that are working with us, you know, that want to tell our stories or just want to be part of the cause. Like Nick said, doesn't have to be about disability, that it's more about that collaboration. Cause that's like the real change that we're talking about. It's that connection that's going to help disrupt ableism and help us, you know, come out of that. I remember when it started, I remember it in New York being like six people around a conference table. And it's grown so much, and it's just been amazing to see the growth. And I can't believe I did a film last year with my baby. And that was like a moment for me with COVID and everything going on that I was like, I'm still an actor. I'm still a creative person. I made a film, and that really helped me, you know, personally. And the film challenge gave me an opportunity to do that. You can't make something up like that. You know, that's just real impactful change that I think is happening like one story at a time. So huge fan, obviously, of the film challenge, but just that, like, it's just an, it's a real opportunity for people. So anyone that's listening that thought about it, do it. You should do it.
And wrapping it up, so you guys each are new parents. What do you wish for your children and their future with dwarfism? Do you think it's going to have barriers and stigmas when they get to be parents and your age?
Well, I mean, for me, this is the interesting thing. We actually don't know if our daughter has dwarfism yet, because my kind of dwarfism is unique in that my parents didn't know I was a little person until I was two or almost three. So partially that answer could be different depending on if she's a little person or if she's not. You know, as I said, society, I feel like, is just more open. And I just hope that she's able to just embrace everything and just kind of enjoy life and learn how to, you know, whether it's us or whether it's herself, you know, brush off, you know, comments or reactions, which are natural. You know, other kids don't always know. I mean, it's instinctual for a kid to be like, what's the deal? Why is this? I mean, they are, you know, no filter talking things out. So I think it's important to not over shelter, you know, to let things happen and to teach or just be comfortable in those moments.
I would agree. I think it's such a big question that does change every day in my brain and in my heart, my thoughts about it. But I think that I would ideally love the world to be a perfect place for my son, you know, but it's not going to be. And that's because as humans, as a human society, you know, I think we're working on being better, but it does take time. Change takes time and awareness takes time. And so I just hope that I'm a good model for him on how to deal with hard situations and, how to, you know, be fully self-accepting of himself, but that, you know, listening to me and my husband and sharing with Logan on our experience and how we've overcome and how we can keep pushing for the change. And he's going to rock at it.
So one final question, where can our listeners follow and connect and learn more about you guys?
Yeah, thank you. I mean, you can definitely always tune in and be up to date on me on my website. It's my name, SophiaCheyenne.com. Sophia Cheyenne. And I'm Sophia Cheyenne on all my social media. So Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. But yeah, you can contact me through my website. And I don't have any shows coming up, but possibly working on a musical that I've been with for a while, Otherworld. But some good things coming for sure. And also I do a lot of consultant work with arts organizations. So if that's anything that people are interested in, yeah, give me a shout.
Perfect. Nick, where are you landing these days?
So you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Nick Novicki. It's Nick with no K. So NICNOVICKI. And you can learn about the Easter Seals Disability Film Challenge. Go to disabilityfilmchallenge.com and you can follow us at Disability Film Challenge. And we have a lot of different workshops and seminars that we do. And also, if you follow me, you can find out if I'm coming to a city near you or any other updates about my career.
Thank you so much, Sophia and Nick, for being on the show. I really appreciate your time and educating me and all of our listeners worldwide more on dwarfism for Dwarfism Awareness Month in October. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. So nice to meet you, Shelley. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it was really great. And to our listeners, thanks for listening worldwide to us. And don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button so you never miss an opportunity to hear Disability Talks. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Disability Talks. Want to keep the conversation going? Then visit our website at abilitiesinmotion.org or connect with us on social media. And remember, don't diss my ability.